This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
I'm talking this morning to Christopher Davison, the chief executive and co-founder of AirAsia's new fintech platform, BigPay. Now, Chris, welcome to the show. Interesting how you basically seeded this idea with Tony Fernandez and you've gotten traction. Tell me about how you basically brought this idea to Tony and sold him the idea.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on your show at BFM. Pleasure to be here. My background is I'm originally from London, and London was actually one of the first places that fintech really kicked off. I think you can see the origins of it after the global financial crash when people stopped having trust in banks and financial services. Everyone had to be bailed out by the government, and that was at the cost of the taxpayer. And that happened in a lot of different places. So fintech has been around for a long time, but the real last boom started about 10 years ago, and London was kind of at the epicenter. And my background is financial services. I worked in a large bank. I worked on the restructuring of some of the large European banks. And then I moved into fintech. So I was part of a founding team of a fintech company in London. And then I worked in investment in fintech and data companies. Fintech and data are very closely related. And of course, Tony spends a lot of time in London. He has a football club there. And QPR, I support Reading, by the way, so they're kind of competitors, but QPR are actually doing better right now.
So why don't you talk to Sir John Medeski instead? And that's only partly facetious. How did you dangle the idea? How did you get it sold with Tony?
So Tony has one of the most successful companies. And I think in terms of Southeast Asia, there are very few ASEAN-wide brands and businesses that cover the whole region. And they have amazing data. So 85 million people a year fly on AirAsia, I think, this year. And they have the Tune Group companies, and one of their businesses was Tune Money. And that has an e-money license, which allows people to store money in a mobile phone or in a digital format. They had an old product that was just a prepaid card and no tech that went around it. So what my suggestion to him was, let's keep that license and start the business from scratch. So we built it from the bottom up, entirely new tech stack. We hired some of the best people from all around the world, all around the region, and we have started building what I would call not really an e-wallet, but a challenger bank. So what we're trying to do is do what your bank does, but just better.
So how did you reach out to him? Did you tweet him? Did you call him? Did you mail him?
No. I met him in London. So I met him through family connections, and I pitched the idea to him, and I kept on pitching it, and it took a long time. It took a year from pushing the idea to like actually getting approval from AirAsia board. So it took a year.
Okay, what was the main gist of the pitch?
That I think you could see in Europe, and it was very early days, the success of some of the other challenger banks. So the three most successful companies there are all 3 years old, and they basically all started with a prepaid model. They're now valuations between $1 and nearly $2 billion in under 3 years. And at that point, it was definitely a gamble that that business model would work. But it's a fundamentally different model from the QR code model that probably come from North Asia and China. And I think there's some form of validation in terms. Grab announced recently that they're actually going to do a prepaid card with their wallet. And it just shows that the model is different in different areas. And I guess flattery, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. And competition is good. So competition in this area will really push value for consumers.
So some of the biggest names from Europe, I think Revolut is one of them. Monzo is the other one, right?
Yep. Number 26 as
number
well.
Number 26, yeah. So they've got billion-dollar valuations, all kind of like Euro unicorns, yeah? On what basis is this valuation accorded?
So generally, fintech companies are valued on two key metrics, which are user numbers and your transactional volume. And it depends on the type of user. So like how active they are, how much they're engaged with your product. And those are the two key things. So it's about engagement, user numbers, and transactional volume.
Okay, so Tony's made a big deal in the past of saying that AirAsia Berhad doesn't get the kind of valuation that thinks it deserves, because the street doesn't understand the fact that they've got 63 million users in their databases, right? So obviously this is one way to monetize it. Now, the thing is, yours is a kind of graduation in evolutionary terms away from the Grab or the Lazadas or the Fave Pays, which are very much ring-fenced to the kind of services within their ecosystem. Yours goes a little bit more beyond the AirAsia passengers, right? Yours is much beyond that into financial services. Is that right, or am I off the mark here?
I'd absolutely agree. And I think when you fly on an aeroplane, you have to put in very specific data. You have to say what your passport number is. You have to give very accurate information. Otherwise, you are not going to get on that aeroplane. And so that's what I would call very high resolution data. And that's great for selling air tickets. And it's one of the most successful airlines in the world. And they have a great database and great, very forward-thinking analytics. But what else is that information really good for? Financial services. You need to know who a person is with like huge accuracy, and then you can start offering them financial services. And I think that was where the evolution came from. And I guess we are looking at building a product for AirAsia customers, but for everyone. So people are continually being ripped off by banks and being charged high fees when they travel, and they hide all of the fees. Our ethos is to offer better value, transparent and fair financial services. That's the whole business model.
So you're also a co-founder, and I presume one of Tony's companies is also a shareholder. How is BigPay structured right now? Who are the shareholders?
So AirAsia is the only shareholder.
AirAsia Berhad, the listed co?
Correct. Okay. So AirAsia Berhad, the listed company, is the main shareholder.
With how many percent?
They're the only shareholder apart from there are employee options. So that's how we've attracted some really good people to push the business forward. So essentially, there's an alignment of interests in the growth of the business. And that's what drives it really forward. I think that's the DNA of the company, is like a best practice Silicon Valley firm where everyone is working together and aligned to deliver value.
Of course. So how many percent is AirAsia Berhad, and how many is you plus the other main employees?
AirAsia has 75%.
Okay. And 25 is held between yourself?
And all of the employees.
Okay. So you are CEO and co-founder with all the lion's share of that, yeah, presumably?
No, it's fairly equally spread between employees, and we haven't given out all of the options yet.
Okay. So what kind of valuations does BigPay attract right now? And on what basis is it accorded this valuation?
So we haven't disclosed any valuation yet. We have been internally funded by AirAsia. And I think when we launched, Tony tweeted to his many million users, one day we'll be more valuable than AirAsia. We have a way to go, but we've had great, great traction.
On what basis did Tony say that?
If you look globally, the largest industry in the world isn't retail, it isn't transportation, it's financial services. And it is such a huge market. And Southeast Asia is one of the fastest growing markets for financial services. This is why you see all the big boys coming in, whether it's the China companies, whether it's Grab with billions of dollars. Everyone is trying to enter this space because the prize is huge.
It's also highly fragmented. So how do you differentiate yourself from the Lazadas and the Faves and the Kipples and the GrabPays of this world? Not even talking about the Alibabas and the Tencents and the Alipays and the Samsung Pays as well.
Our business and app is fundamentally different. We are not going around offering merchant discounts to essentially use it and acquire merchants one by one, which is the model which almost everyone else is doing, which is QR payments. We are looking at more holistic financial services and where you can use and spend your money anywhere in the world using MasterCard. And yeah, it's fundamentally different.
Well, the problem with having that differentiation is also the fact that your boundaries are quite low. So, for example, like Grab did, they have just only recently linked up with MasterCard. So now they have that ubiquity around the world. What's to prevent in Alipay or Samsung Pay or Alibaba or Tencent are going to do the same thing?
Yeah, there's nothing to stop anyone doing the same thing.
China's a 1.4 billion market. ASEAN is 630 million, but you're very fragmented here. We are very fragmented here. China is not.
Correct. I mean, that's exactly why they're successful. You have, I guess, two large companies in payments in China. It's a market of, 1.4, 1.5 billion. And there was regulator support, so you can grow very, very large there. I think what you can see is that in a fragmented market, it gives companies which AirAsia knows this market. It's its backyard. It's where it's built its business. And with that diversity and understanding allows us to focus on the markets which we know. It's not about building one big market and just working in that market.
Okay, so right now, a lot of the services that you provide, such as, for example, remittances, peer-to-peer remittances are free. You go overseas and you take our money from the ATM machine. It's only a 10 bucks, 10 ringgit flat fee. Your spot forex rates are very, very competitive. So you're underwriting a lot of these costs, which banks would otherwise have monetized. How are you paying for all this?
So, yeah, when you go abroad, I think that's a really important point. We charge zero markup on your FX, so it's cheaper than a mid-valley market. So why queue up in mid-valley and take cash out? If you actually load your card, it's free to load. And then when you go abroad, we don't do any markup. So it's cheaper than going to mid-valley, certainly cheaper than any bank card, which will charge you somewhere between 2 and 5% when you travel. But to go back to your original question, essentially what we're doing is providing value and service to our customers. So we're giving them a product that they like and value.
So how are you So obviously the cash flow of AirAsia Berhad is funding this entire operation right now, but there's a monetary value to it, right? So in totality, yourself, your salary, plus all the other associated monetary values of these freebies that you're giving out, what is the total cash burn on a monthly basis?
So to go back to the point that we're doing it from AirAsia cash flow, we're a separate company. We have to go to the board and we take investment, and we are structured exactly like another tech startup. So I would say in terms of money that has been put in, it's in line with a Series A. We don't actually disclose the amount of our metrics yet or our cash burn, but it is a lot lower than all of the comparables in Europe doing the same business model. We've done it very, very leanly. Relatively.
I'm talking to Christopher Davison, the chief executive and co-founder of AirAsia's new fintech platform, BigPay. After this, we're going to be talking about the big picture in terms of the financial services that you'll be offering and the challenges associated with it.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
I'm talking this morning to Christopher Davison, the chief executive and co-founder of AirAsia's new fintech platform, BigPay. So now you're a fully licensed e-money issuer approved by Bank Negara. I think there's about 31, at least 31 licenses in the country, right? Mm. The big picture is to be a bank, essentially, to supplant the Maybanks and the CIMBs as well. You are what the board of directors at Bermudala National and Khazanah National should be afraid of, right? So what exactly is at stake here?
So I think banks are always, as you said, kind of government-linked companies, and they are not innovative. Like any big organization, it's hard for them to be innovative. They have old-fashioned technology. They are bureaucratic. It's hard for them to innovate or develop technology or even to attract the right talent to build. And if you look at the banking model in general, you have lots of branches, you have lots of overhead costs, and then you can't innovate. What we're doing is we're stripping away all of those costs. We're being data-led. We're using machine learning, artificial intelligence to make better decisions. So ultimately, we will be able to deliver what banks deliver, but better and cheaper, and pass those value on to the customer.
So you don't have the cost structure of a branch network, nor the agents and the staff that man the counters, but a lot of your services right now are free, yeah? You're underwriting a lot of these costs and putting it on your balance sheet at this point in time. At what point in time do these services become free, though? At what point in time do you charge people? What kind of milestones before you do that?
So for the services we have right now, we're not going to charge, and that's by offering utility and value to our customers. In the long run, how all banks actually make money is actually lending. So a bank's is what's called your net interest margin. So it's the difference between your deposits and what you lend out at. And I guess as interest rates have come down, that net interest margin has actually been squeezed for all banks. So they come under more pressure.
Let's talk about the AirAsia model right now. A lot of when they started out, they were very, very cheap and very affordable. But over time, they built in a lot of costs into the system. Basically, now they charge you for everything, even for additional baggage. Any additional increment in terms of their effort and work involved is chargeable. Now, presumably, you'll be following the same model. Right now, it's free. Now, it's very affordable. It's highly competitive and it's very attractive. But over time, it's going to become expensive and, well, laden with layers and layers of charges. Or is that a false assumption?
So I actually like the comparison of AirAsia and BigPay or fintech. So what low-cost carriers did to full-service carriers is actually a parallel. So full-service carriers like banks, government-linked, lots of inefficiencies. And when you pay a very full fare, and then you maybe get a meal that you don't like, and the cost is high. And then low-cost carriers like AirAsia came in and totally disrupted the model and made it fairer and easier for people to travel, for family, for business. And what they do is they strip everything down and you get what you want. So you essentially unbundle and then you can add on. Like an example is AirAsia food. I mean, it's actually really nice. But if you don't want it, you don't have to buy it. So you can pick the value and pick for what you pay. And that's exactly the same model that we will use. So we have unbundling banking in the same way. So you can do payments, you can get cheaper money when you travel, which is like the core USP of what we have. And later on, we will add premium services to this product, but it's totally up to you if you take it, and they will be competitive relative to the market. So that's the long-term way of monetizing it, whether it's through lending, whether it's through remittance, whether it's through premium features. Those are the ways to monetize it in the future.
I'm talking this morning to Christopher Davidson, the chief executive and co-founder of AirAsia's new fintech platform, BigPay. So let's talk about lending services, which is the staple of all financial services institutions. Over time, you'll know a lot about people, your customers. You'll have deep, complex data about them, and you'll be able to ascertain how creditworthy or not they are. So how does this work, and what kind of net interest margins will you be looking at?
Right. So all financial services is about managing risk. So the risk of onboarding a new customer, the risk of monitoring transactions, or the risk of the main bit of the business, which is lending. So essentially, what information you have, whether it's day-to-day payment information or other information you can pull from alternative sources, allows you to manage that risk and make better decisions. If you, and this is fundamentally where you come down to looking at it in a new way, you employ essentially artificial intelligence, machine learning, and you can actually improve your risk score and take other forms of data to make better decisions.
So, correct. So the possibility of bad loans happening or loans going sour will be greatly diminished, theoretically speaking, right? Mm. Does your Bank Negara license allow for this additional feature of lending, though?
We have an e-money license with Bank Negara, but we also have a lending license. So we actually have one. We just haven't operationalized it yet.
Okay. So how would you upend for lending? Will it be ticket sizes? Will it be interest rates? Will it be tenure? How will it happen? Will it be documentation? How does this thing happen?
So I think it will be a combination. So it will be about essentially having access and speed and delivery of the loan in a much quicker format than having to deal with a bank or traditional loan providers. And you will do it in real time. So we are a stored value facility, an e-money provider, and you top it up from a bank or from another card, or eventually we're going to allow cash top up. But another source will be credit. So I want to add 5,000 ringgit because I want to book a holiday for my family and go away. We will just say top up via credit, and you're allowed to top up your account with a credit amount in real time, really efficiently.
Correct.
Using different data at better value than the comparables.
So how much will that cost a consumer?
If you're a
blue chip consumer, right, you pay everything on time, you've got lots of cash in your bank accounts, you would be tier one, right? What kind of interest rates would you charge the guy?
I mean, they're capped as well in Malaysia, so we wouldn't be able to go too high. But it would, exactly that. It's about,
what's the cap?
It's 15% per year, or APR.
15% of what?
15% APR.
What's APR?
The cap of lending.
What is APR?
It's your annual percentage repayment.
Okay, of what?
Of the loan.
Okay, so explain that in English. How does that work for the normal human being?
So if you borrow 100 ringgit, you have to pay back on an annualized basis 15%. That's
okay.
The max. That's a cap.
Okay, so that's your annual interest rate. Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, so you charge as much as 15% a year. You can charge.
You can. That's under the regulations, yes.
So a 15% interest rate would be for your worst borrowers, right? The most
correct.
Uncredited.
And then we would actually bring it right down to as low as we can. Our,
how low is as we can?
I don't know yet. We haven't launched the lending business yet.
In your mind?
I don't know.
That's the crux of it, right?
We don't know how low we can go with the lending. Our whole ethos of the business is to go as low as we can.
Okay, so that's the number one question now. Because if the big picture is financial services, and if the big picture within financial services is lending, then it comes down to what your best borrowers can pay. Is it 1%? Is it 0.5%? Is it 0.01%? What is it?
It's, I would actually turn it on the head. It's not really where you look at your best borrowers. What you really need to do is actually understand your worst borrowers. So actually when you're building a lending business, you actually want to make bad loans to understand where that actually is on a statistical basis. So actually you want to keep on pushing the envelope of making bad loans without losing that much money.
Well, on bad loans, you make the most interest rate, clearly, right?
Correct. I
mean, so they would be the most lucrative borrower, albeit bad, but...
But you learn, right? So actually, this is how you build it out. You don't know who is good and you don't know who is bad. So if
you just told me you've got artificial intelligence, got all this amazing technology to tell you what is good and what is bad.
Correct. That's where you find out that information, but you only do it by testing. So essentially, you make a bunch of different ideas and put out a bunch of different parameters, and you don't know that someone with traditionally like bad credit history may actually be an excellent credit because you pull in a different source, say, I don't know, a social media feed or another form of information or metadata that a normal bank wouldn't use. A normal bank will use usually two things, which is be a credit rating agency score. And then the other thing that they would use is your annual income. But if we can actually enhance that data, we could actually give someone who's traditionally a bad credit a loan. And that is very enabling because essentially, as long as you're giving a fair interest rate to them, it allows them to develop their business. It allows them to grow in life. So,
and also very lucrative, even if they pay on time, but you charge them a high rate because they have not demonstrably shown to themselves to be credit worthy.
I still come back to where we are, which is we will offer the best value in the market. So,
okay, let's talk about peer-to-peer remittances. Right now it's free. So if you're a foreign laborer in Malaysia, you're going to send money back to your brother in Indonesia, yeah? That transfer is free. Over time, what is it going to cost?
So at the moment, you can send money from one big pay user to another big pay user, but that's actually only domestically. So they both have to be Malaysian residents.
Oh, they must be domiciled here.
Correct.
Okay.
But we are going to do cross-border remittance, so you will be able to do that. So say you're an Indonesian resident in Malaysia working here and you have family in Indonesia.
That would be the big picture, clearly, right?
That would be the... Then we want to do cross-border remittances.
Correct. So what are the regulatory hurdles to that?
You need to have a license for remittance.
From that particular central bank of that particular country?
No, from the country from which you are sending, so outbound. So we actually have that license as well. We haven't operationalized it yet, but we're going to start remittances next year.
Okay. So you only need license to be licensed in the particular country in which you incorporated?
To do outward bound.
To do outward bound. But if that brother in Indonesia wants to send money back, you then need to be licensed in Indonesia, for example.
Correct.
And how difficult would that be?
It's very different according to different countries. I guess what we're trying to serve here is intra-ASEAN remittance corridors. So there's a huge market, Indonesian migrant workers sending money back to Indonesia, or Filipinos sending money back from Malaysia as well. And these guys get really ripped off. They go at weekends to...
Correct.
Money remittance guys, and they get, you know, these guys are working really hard.
And that's the conundrum, right? Because central banks have a very close nexus with the banks themselves, as Wall Street has shown. Why would they license you in those countries if they know they're going to be undermined and disrupted by people like yourself?
I mean, yes, there are...
I mean, that is the conundrum here.
There are vested interests, and there always are. But essentially, the job of the regulator is to look after the citizens of that country and allow them to be offered better value and better services. And that is what our business is all about. And actually, when we've met regulators in other countries, they understand that. They understand what AirAsia did. They came and they democratized travel. They made it cheaper for people to fly, which meant businesses could grow, tourism can grow.
Correct. But until today, AirAsia still has tiffs going on with the regulators as well as their airport operators. So it's not been a cakewalk so far. But, you know, I mean, Christopher, we've run out of time. Just tell me, I mean, in broad terms, what, you know, you've told the board, I mean, what the board expects Big Pay to be worth in, say, 10 years' time. What kind of big picture are we looking at?
Okay, I'll give an indication, which is, say, the peers in Europe in 3 years have been worth somewhere between $1 and $2 billion in 3 years.
On the back of how many users and how many transactions?
Correct. And we are growing faster than they, all of those three, in a comparable stage. So if we carry on with our growth, I think you could benchmark against that within 3 years.
All right, Christopher. Well, thank you for your time. Good luck with the business plan. Great. And I hope to be speaking to you in the foreseeable future with some kind of fruition. That was Christopher Davison, the chief executive and co-founder of AirAsia's new fintech platform, BigPay, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.